This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're doing an update on workers' compensation issues and laws. My guests are Lester Friedman, past chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's a member of the Board of Directors and management chair of the California Applicants Attorneys Association. His offices are in Beverly Hills. Alice O'Sullivan, a past chair of the Board of Legal Specialization, a member of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and his first time on the program, Jason Marcus, a member of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, which we'll abbreviate as CAA, C-AAA. His offices are in Sacramento. Some years ago, his father, who is a renowned workers' comp attorney, was a guest on this program several times and a great supporter of the program. So it's great to have you. And Jason, are you still there on the phone?
Yes, sir. I'm right here.
Good. I wanted to make sure. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the California Applicants Attorneys Association, whose about 1,000 members statewide represent workers injured at the workplace. The other major funder of this program is the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Let me start, if you don't mind, Alice, with you, and it's wonderful to have you back. And I want all of you to know that Alice O'Sullivan, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, is nearly here every month when we do Call a Lawyer Night. So I was able to drag her in from the Call a Lawyer conference room to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you, Chuck. Actually, Martin asked me if I was doing double duty. I was going to run back and forth, but I don't think I will.
She runs well. So anyone who wants to talk to her, just let us know and she'll run down the hall. Alice, if you would do this, who needs workers' compensation insurance? I mean, the real practical situation. Who needs it?
Well, this is an interesting question, Chuck, and I mentioned before the program that I actually had some calls off the air with this very question. And all employers who employ anyone need to have workers' compensation be covered, have workers' compensation insurance, or there's a way they can be self-insured. But the real question that came to me was had to do with nonprofits. And actually, someone from a church called me. The church employs a pastor and an organist and a few other secretary, that sort of thing. They did not have workers' compensation insurance coverage. So I think it's really important that if you employ somebody, you need to talk to your insurance broker, your insurance company. You need to get workers' compensation coverage because every worker in California should be covered.
Well, let me then ask you this. If you're talking about someone called who was an employee of the church and the pastor was an employee of the church, if someone works for someone, whether it's a nonprofit or whatever, and there's no workers' comp insurance and someone is injured on the job, what is the recourse of the injured worker?
Well, if you're an injured worker in California and your employer does not have insurance, we have something called the Uninsured Employers Fund.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But very frankly, it's as Jason and Lester will attest, it's a difficult program to get money from. Mm-hmm. It causes even extraordinary delays.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sometimes that is not funded. So even if you get a judgment, you don't get the money.
Oh, that's awful.
It's a difficult situation.
Awful.
So,
and of course, you know, for the employer.
This is Lester. Go ahead, Lester.
I'm sorry. This is Lester. For the employer who fails to get insurance and they rely upon this uninsured employers fund, they're not getting off scot-free. What's going to happen is that the state is going to go after that individual or company, and sometimes mm-hmm. both, in order to get any monies that they do wind up paying back from that company.
So that's exactly right. And sometimes they get it up. They try to get it up front, of course. And so anyone who employs a worker in California should look into getting, make sure they have that insurance.
Today, I want to throw this out to you, if you don't mind, Alice, Lester, and Jason. if someone is injured on the job, and let's assume that there is workers' compensation there, and that's not an issue, but someone in today's economy where we have such a high unemployment rate compared to what it's been like prior to the Great Recession, or at least what's called the Great Recession, if someone is injured on the job, are you finding that injured workers are reluctant to let their supervisors know about it because they are fearful that perhaps they could be either demoted or perhaps lose their jobs? Are you finding that going on at this point?
Well, this is Jason. I'll take it.
Jason,
take
if you would. That? Yeah, go ahead.
I find more often than not the clients that I'm meeting with that are looking for a lawyer have already filed a claim, and their concern is not so much what's going to happen if I file the claim, but what's going to happen now that I've filed the claim and maybe I've been off work for a month or two receiving treatment.
Yeah.
Do I have a job to go back to? What happens when a doctor releases me to work? But by and large, they are very, very concerned about their jobs, and most of my clients are eager to get back to work as soon as possible. Not only may they be getting less money on disability than they would be if they were working, but frankly, I think they mm-hmm. feel much better about themselves when they're working, and so they're eager to get back to work.
Lester, you know, my experience is very similar to Jason's. A lot of there's a lot of thought out there that people want to be off of work and be on disability, but people can't make it on the disability payments they get, and I would say 99% of my clients want to get back to work as soon as they can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What is the amount of disability? What you know compared? What I presume it's a percentage to what their normal salary is, or is there a limit that has no relationship to their salary? What could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is Jason. When people are off work, typically initially after the injury, either they can't work then, maybe they've had a surgery and need time to recover, they're entitled to a benefit that we call temporary disability. And we calculate that based on what we call their average weekly wages or average weekly earnings. That is, what were they earning at the time of their injury? And we look at those gross pre-tax earnings, and then they receive two-thirds of those earnings on a biweekly basis, so they get a check every 2 weeks. Those benefits, however, are capped by state law, and I believe the current cap is somewhere around, I want to say, $1,050 or $1,100 per week, and I apologize for not having the exact number, but that specific cap goes up each year in relation to the increase in California state average weekly wage, so it changes year by year.
But it has a relationship to the net income that the worker gets on a regular pay period. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
And Jason, isn't it true that you also get credit if you are in a situation where you get meals, for example? Do you get some sort of credit towards your earnings for getting benefits, other benefits at work?
That's correct. Yeah, wages and compensation is the term we use. So it's not just the money you get if you're provided lodging, if you get a per diem, if you get special pay if you're on call, for example. Overtime is calculated into that. Anything that an employee gets as part of their compensation package is typically factored into coming up with that number again that we call their average weekly wage.
Now, one of the things that is not, this is Lester, one of the things that is not included is necessarily health insurance. So if an employer is providing health insurance and they, let's say, their policy for all employees, whether or not they're injured on the job or they have a personal accident that they're out of work for, whatever the reason is, if the employer says, we will not pay for your insurance if you're not working for, let's say, 90 days, that injured worker will also lose his health insurance after the same period of time that a non-work-related injured person would lose theirs.
Let's take a break for just a moment. All right, it's about 10 minutes after 7. I want to let you know, everybody, it is our regular Call a Lawyer night. We have a number of attorneys here, certified specialists and those who are not certified specialists. who are willing, able, and ready to take your call, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. As we get a little bit later into the program, I'll let you know who they are. But the areas are criminal law, family law, legal malpractice law, employment law, landlord-tenant law, business, entertainment, trademark law, tax law, real estate, patent law, aviation, lemon law, arbitration, etc. And then tomorrow, Leon Bayer, certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will take your calls on his 800 number from 8 a.m. to noon, and I'll give you the details about that in a little bit. That's 1-800-525-9917. If you would like to call in and speak to my guests on the air, my three guests on the air, it's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. We're doing our program. It's been actually a number of months. I think what we need to do, Lester and Jason and Alice, is try to do the workers' compensation issues and laws more frequently than we have. I didn't realize, but I think the last program we did was back in January of this year, and I think we need to get together more often than that.
That would be fun.
Yeah, good. Lester Friedman, Jason Marcus, and Alice O'Sullivan are my guests. This particular program is co-funded by the California Applicants Attorneys Association and the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Let me come back to you with something that I'm a little concerned about that we discussed before we went on the air. And that is that it's my understanding that when someone has been injured, with some frequency in the number of cases that take place, that a potential offer of settlement is, with respect to the medical recovery, that if you accept the medical recovery, whatever is offered, then we're going to ask that you resign from your job. Could you both talk, the three of you talk about that? Hello? Hello?
We're all waiting for each other. Alice, you want to take that?
I'll take it for a bit. I think, Chuck, that what happens is because employers don't want the liability of having someone continue to work when they've paid them extra money to settle out their medical care claim, they often will give extra money to settle out the medical claim, but then they want the people to leave the job. It's really important that workers know that neither party, neither the employer nor the injured worker, no one has to settle their case. In other words, there's a stipulation where you can agree on the amount of permanent disability and keep your medical treatment open. Or if you can't agree, there's a procedure whereby you can go to the board to get a judge to tell you the amount of permanent disability. And so you do not have to settle your case, and that's very important. Nor does the employer. You may say, well, you know what? I want an extra so much to settle out my medical care. Mm-hmm. But the employer does not have to settle either.
When you say to settle out my medical care, what does that really mean? Can you give us an example of certainly using some monetary figures if
sure.
that's possible?
Supposing that you injure your knee and you've had surgery on your knee and there's a possibility and, in fact, probably a likelihood that you may need surgery in the future at least some amount of medical treatment. Since medical treatment is so expensive these days, you may have other insurance, which is a whole nother issue, whether it'll cover it or not. But you may need the money and want the money rather than have your medical care. So supposing an employer were to offer $3,000 or $5,000
as opposed to your having that for future medical
exactly
coverage.
Instead of having it for your future medical, they will pay you, and then you have no more right, no more right to have any medical care paid for by the workers'
comp. That doesn't sound like, generally speaking, a very wise thing to do. What thoughts do you, Lester and Jason, have about that?
This is Lester. I always tell my clients that my advice to them is that they leave their medical care open.
Mm-hmm.
That is always the safest way to go. But there are many situations where an injured worker perhaps is no longer working for the same employer, and they've gone on to a new employer, and through that new employer they may have health insurance. And in that situation, it certainly is reasonable for them to consider settling out their medical care with the former employer because they don't have any ties to that former employer anymore.
Mm-hmm. Jason, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I agree with Lester that typically keeping one's medical care open is the safest bet, and that's kind of the default position of the workers' compensation system. Once you've had an injury and have had medical care, typically you have a right to medical care so long as the doctor says you need it, unless you settle that out.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, you know, like Lester said, people have other insurance. Sometimes, frankly, they need the money for a variety of reasons. I have a number of clients who maybe have gone through one surgical procedure, perhaps had a bad outcome, or another surgery is recommended, and the doctor says, you know, I can't give you more than a 50-50 guarantee that you're going to have recovery. So maybe they're thinking they're not going to undergo further surgical procedures, and there's a dollar offer on the table where they can, you know, take that money knowing they're not going to undergo those further procedures. And it makes financial sense for them to do that. But again, I'd agree with Lester that the safest bet in most cases is keeping the medical open.
Mm-hmm.
One other consideration, frankly, is what can sometimes be the difficulty of obtaining medical care through the workers' compensation system. There are a number of limits on the choice of doctor, who you can see, you know, when things are scheduled, how you obtain authorization for treatment, a lot of things that may not be present in the private healthcare world. And those things also factor into someone's decision whether to keep or settle out their medical award in a workers' compensation claim.
Just to make sure I understand what you're saying there, are you saying, Jason, that if you settle out your medical in a workers' compensation case, it may be that now that you're restricted to your own medical doctor who's not covered, let's say, in the workers' compensation procedure, that you're not necessarily going to get the same kind of medical care or the extent of care, or did I misunderstand?
Well, I think the point I'm making is within the workers' compensation system, that is, you're obtaining treatment and it's being provided by the workers' compensation insurance carrier, there are limits sometimes. We have what are called medical provider networks, which are lists of doctors that are approved to provide treatment. And if you see a doctor that is outside of that network, typically the workers' compensation carrier doesn't have liability to pay for that. Mm-hmm. So maybe you really want to see Dr. Smith because he's the best surgeon in town and your friends recommend him, but if he's not in the medical provider network of your workers' compensation carrier, you can't go see that doctor in the workers' comp system. So in that situation, perhaps settling out the workers' comp medical, getting money for that, and then you can go and see that doctor on your own terms, either paying for it out of pocket or with other insurance. Does that make sense?
Yes. I think it certainly does. We're going to take a couple of calls before in a couple of minutes or so, but I want to ask this. Before we went on the air, you mentioned that there was something like 15,000 IMR requests. First of all, what does IMR stand for, and what is the significance of this? Lester, could you respond to that?
Sure. IMR stands for Independent Medical Review. What happens now in the workers' compensation system is that the employers, if they have a medical provider network, MPN, which is their approved list of doctors, the insurance carrier can select the doctor. If that doctor makes a recommendation that the insurance company doesn't agree with, then the remedy that the injured worker has is to request independent medical review. Up until this year, any disputes regarding medical treatment would be determined by a judge. Under the new law, the requests that are objected to by the insurance company go to this independent medical review. During the first 6 months or so of this year, independent medical review only applied to injuries that occurred during this year, and there were somewhere around 700-800 IMR requests during the first 6 months. As of July 1st of this year, regardless of the date of injury, so we're going, you know, we can go back 10 years, 15 years, whatever, on cases that are open, all requests that were objected to by an insurance company were subject to this independent medical review process. As a result, the Department of Workers' Compensation issued a report at the during the beginning of September indicating that during the month of August, there were over 15,000 requests for independent medical review that the attorney, that the insurance companies had objected to, and either the injured worker or their attorney had requested independent medical review.
What's the consequence with so many requests for an IMR?
Well, the IMR theoretically was set up so that there would be a quick review by a medical professional of any request for medical treatment. I don't think that the Department of Workers' Compensation anticipated this kind of onslaught of requests, and we're finding that the processing time for these requests is inordinate, and medical treatment that is being objected to by the insurance company, a lot of times, if not most times, by their own medical provider network doctors, is being delayed.
So people have to realize there may be some delay in terms of the progress of their case. Is that correct?
At this point, in terms of getting medical treatment, which ultimately could keep a worker off of work longer while it's determined whether or not the medical care is appropriate.
Let's pause for just a moment. All right. It's about 22 minutes after 7. It is our Call a Lawyer night. We have a number of attorneys here who are ready, willing, and able to talk to you. It's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917 for our Call a Lawyer night. And also, if you'd like to talk to my guests, we're going to take some calls in just about another minute or so. That number, 1-415-841-4134, whether you're listening in the Bay Area or you're listening on the internet at www.kalw.org. That number for on the air is 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on update of workers' compensation laws and issues. My guests are Alice O'Sullivan, Jason Marcus, and Lester Friedman. And let me do this, if you don't mind. Lester and Alice, you are both certified specialists in workers' compensation law. Both of you, are former chairs of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. You want to say or tell, anyway, in other words, lawyers who want to become certified specialists, that the next, as I understand it, the next exam is on October 22nd. What comments do you have for them?
Well, I encourage everybody who's been in practice in workers' compensation or in any area that the board certifies as specialists, if you've been in practice in that area since January 2012, we're encouraging you to take the examination. The amount of time that you need to work in the specialty is longer than this, but you can begin the process by taking the exam, and you can fill out the information online. It's available at californiaspecialist.org. You can fill out your application, and you should do it right away. I believe the last day to apply is October 15th.
October 15th, and the exam is on October
22nd. But if you need to do it actually by October 1st, I think it's less money.
All right. Let me also mention to you, if you want to get more information with respect to who might be a, let's say, a workers' compensation attorney in your area, wherever you are in the state of California, you can go to the CAAA website, www.caaa.org, or you can call 1-800-648-3132. That's www.caaa.org or call 1-800-648-3132. And the Board of Legal Specialization's website, if I can only get that out, is California Specialist. That's one long word, californiaspecialist.org. And it can, if you go to that and look for the specialist in your geographic area, it will tell you who the specialists are, whether it's workers' comp or whatever. So let's take a couple of calls if we can while we still are in our statewide version of the program. Mark, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I'll get through this as quickly as I can. I have an 11-year-old claim for a neck and back injury, which is being handled by the State Compensation Insurance Fund. They offered me a permanent settlement some time ago, which after long consideration, I elected to take. I did speak with an attorney on the phone as to whether I needed legal representation on that. He said that since a QME had evaluated my disability as 29% permanent, that he saw no reason for me to retain an attorney because I wasn't going to get anything better than that. Anyway, I sent the paperwork in 2 months ago, and I noticed that on the letter from the state fund at that time, they said upon my submitting the paperwork, they would complete and submit it to the assigned workers' compensation appeals board for approval. Now, my question is, why is an appeals board involved in this if the compensation insurance fund made the offer and I accepted it? Who is appealing it? And is there a chance that I'm going to lose money on that appeal?
Let me see if I can get some comments for you, Mark. Okay. Lester, do you want to respond to Mark's question?
Sure. The name of the agency is called the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board. It doesn't mean that there is an appeal, but that is the name of the agency that has to approve a settlement. In California, any workers' compensation settlement must be reviewed by a tribunal, usually the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board and a judge. I would say in my practice, I have whether it's a represented worker or a non-represented worker, once the insurance company makes an agreement, let's say to the 29% disability, it is extremely, if not impossible, that it would be not approved by a judge for either the amount that is submitted or a higher amount. The job of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board is to make sure that an injured worker is adequately compensated, and it's not to check whether or not an insurance company is overpaying for an award.
Do you feel at this point, Lester, that it would make sense for Mark to now retain an attorney to help him deal further with this, or do you feel, although this is very difficult for you without knowing all of the facts, or do you feel that he doesn't need somebody?
Well, you know, I really, without knowing what the problems are,
too difficult.
What the diagnosis is, I just couldn't give an opinion.
My thought is, I'll tell you, Mark, my thought, and I'm not a workers' compensation attorney. I'm basically a consumer attorney. I don't think it hurts to get as much information as possible. I'm not asking you to spend a lot of money on an attorney, but I frankly feel it doesn't hurt to get some further advice from a workers' compensation attorney and make sure that you really feel comfortable about it, especially since you said, am I possibly going to get less than I originally was represented to me. All right. It is, by the way, 729 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. We're doing a program on workers' compensation laws and issues. It's an update. I've got three very competent people, two persons who have been involved with this program a long time, both of whom are past chairs of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, both members of the California Applicants Attorneys Association, that's CAW. Lester Friedman was the past chair of the Board of Legal Specialization just 3 years ago or so? Lester, is it longer than that?
Well,
how long ago?
Probably 4 or 5 years
Oh,
ago.
Brother, time's going too fast. He is now a member of the Board of Directors and Management Chair of CAW, the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Alice O'Sullivan is a past chair of the Board of Legal Specialization. How long ago?
Oh, 100 years.
100 years ago. And a member of CAW. She is a great assistant to me on this program. My connection, major connection with the Board of Legal Specialization as well as CAW, She's here every month to do Call a Lawyer Night. However, she's in the studio now with me on the program. And our newest member of this program, Jason Marcus, is a member of CAW. And Jason, very nice to have you with us.
Yes, thanks for having us. And I just want to say, all this talk about the legal specialization test, I'm actually signed up to take it this year.
So hopefully I'll
join the ranks of the other specialists on the call here. That's the goal.
Good for you.
That's wonderful.
That's terrific. By the way, here's our Call a Lawyer number, and I can't tell if people are all on the phones or not, but it's 1-800-525-9917, and they are Jeffrey Hayden, a certified specialist in criminal law. By the way, if you have a family law question, Janet Lee Frankel will respond to your question. If you call in, give your name and phone number, Janet will call you back tomorrow. She's a certified specialist in family law. Peter Fortune is here. He's the chair of the Commission on Legal Malpractice Law for the Board of Legal Specialization for Employment Law, Bruce Bernstein. Landlord-tenant law, Sam Wu. That's Sam's first time here. Laura Drossman, who's been a guest on this program before, is here for business law, entertainment law, trademark law. Frank Adam is back again. He's been here for many, many years helping. He is in the area of tax law and real estate. And for several years, Ron Rohde, patent law, aviation, lemon law, BBB arbitration. And tomorrow, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be happy to talk to you. He's extremely generous with his time. By the way, there's no obligation if you call Leon or you call anyone for Call a Lawyer. He'll be available tomorrow, Thursday, from 8 till noon. His number, you might want to jot it down if you're being haunted or harassed by creditors, is 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you call and you get, let's say, his voicemail or his office voicemail, leave your name and phone number and tell him you're calling with respect to Call a Lawyer and you have a question for him. All right, let's do this. Let's talk now with Al. Or pardon me, who is it next? Yeah, Al. Al, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, guys. Yeah, this relates to a certain kind of work that I used to do for myself, just simple hammering in posts, hammering a 7-foot post down to a couple of feet and connecting a fence, et cetera. And I have some experience in this sort of thing. I used to be a shop steward on a couple of different jobs, so I'm kind of acquainted with comp stuff. So my idea here is to hire people and get them covered on comp, both to cover them and myself. What would you suggest that I do?
What do you mean? I'm sorry, I don't understand. To cover them and yourself. Are you hiring them?
You get a post and you get that special post hole pounder and you pound it down. I used to do one every half minute or something, but I'm not supposed to be doing that now.
Gotcha. Okay, Alice wants to respond.
I want to hire somebody.
Alice is going to respond, Al.
So as an employer, you can cover yourself, but generally you need to tell the carrier that that's what you want to do. They usually waive coverage as to the employer themselves, but you have a right to have yourself covered.
I don't want to cover myself. I just want to make sure whoever I hire is covered.
Well, then just call some insurance company or an insurance broker. State Compensation Insurance Fund is the one, sort of the default carrier, but you can call a broker and get coverage.
So I have to call an insurance broker. Roughly, ballpark, what would it cost me per hour to get this coverage in terms of worker hour pay?
I couldn't answer that question, but I would encourage you to cover yourself if you're doing any of the work.
This is Lester.
I'm not going to be doing...
Okay, hold on, Al.
I just want to make sure whoever I hire is covered.
Al, Lester wants to respond to you also.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Al, who's the most important employee that you have in your company? I assume it's you.
No, I'm not talking about a company.
Okay,
my neighbor down the street,
Al,
to do
stop.
Some stuff that I no longer can do.
Al, we only have so much time. I want Lester to finish where he's going from. Go ahead, Lester.
The most important employee in your company is you. The least expensive disability insurance, if you get injured on the job, that you can buy is workers' compensation coverage. I would also suggest that you very strongly consider covering yourself.
Okay, we're going to move on. Al, thanks very much for calling. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks for calling. Mark, you're back. I'm sorry. I guess I cut you off. Go ahead.
Yes. My specific question was, when I was offered the 29% settlement, the one attorney I did speak to said the only way he could see that I might get less than that was that if I was on Medicare, they might hold a portion of it for further payments to Medicare regarding my claim. Now, although I am 65, I've never signed up for Medicare. Is there a chance that that's going to happen, that some of the money would not come to me but would be set aside in a Medicare trust fund or something like that?
Jason, can you respond to this?
Yeah, I'll try to do it succinctly. There is a lot to talk about with the interaction with Medicare. The only time you have to worry, though, about having some money set aside for Medicare expenses is if you are settling out the medical portion. In other words, if the insurance company has given you a lump sum cash payment to close out your medical and they've told you, we will not be liable for medical expenses in the future, then yes, if you are of Medicare age, even if you're not using Medicare, federal law tells us that we have to consider Medicare's interest, which is generally been interpreted to mean you have to set aside some amount of money to cover medical expenses that would otherwise be paid for by Medicare. If you are keeping your medical care open and just settling out the permanent disability at 29%, in other words, you're going to get an award for future medical care, you do not need to worry about having money set aside for Medicare in that settlement.
Okay, well, I am taking a permanent settlement that cuts them off the hook completely. They did offer me the option of taking approximately half that amount and leaving it open. Is there a chance that I could still renegotiate that, having already signed for the full settlement?
You know, what I think at this point, Mark, one of the things that the State Bar of California has is that it does not want my guests to give specific legal advice on this radio program. It's much too difficult. The more you ask these questions, the more I believe, since I've been dealing with clients and consumers for nearly 50 years as a lawyer, you really need to go and see another workers' compensation attorney or the person who you saw before. You really need to sit down and talk with someone and ask these questions and get some answers. We can't do it on the program. Thanks okay. very much for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, Tony. Well, is Tony still here? Oh, all right. It's Allison. Oh, my gosh. You know, the guy who helps me on the program, he's doing these hand signals, and I've got numbers for people. Andre, are you there? Who is this? Who's on the phone here? Hello?
Tony.
Okay, Tony. Tony, I don't know why your number or your page was taken down, but Tony, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I have a question. Well, somebody I know lost her job because of getting injured. She's a teacher. And even though she was deemed like 95% recovered, the school elected not to give her back her position. Mm. And she strongly suspects it's because workers' comp revealed psychiatric information about her.
Ooh.
That may have affected her employment.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I'm wondering if she has a case.
What school district, Tony?
San Francisco.
San Francisco. And how long ago was this?
It was last year.
That she lost her job last year, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And she has not sought the advice of an employment law attorney?
No, she went through the whole workers' comp
system. No, not workers' comp. I'm asking if she has seen an attorney who is an employment law attorney, not a workers' comp attorney.
She did consult with someone, but she didn't pursue this.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think it's kind of nebulous what we're talking about here. Do any of either the three of you have any comments for her? I do, Tony. And I think at this point what your friend needs to do, and I'm going to give the number in a moment, if she does not have someone who, a friend or a relative who can, let's say, refer her to an employment law attorney, I think she should contact the San Francisco Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service. We do have tonight Bruce Bernstein, who's an employment law attorney. If you might get your friend. Is your friend listening to the program by any chance?
No.
No. Well, too bad. She needs to get on board.
Right.
Well, she's not around, but I thought of her when I heard your...
Well, here's what I'm going to do. I want you to suggest to your friend that she call the lawyer referral service of the San Francisco Bar.
Uh-huh.
You want to write down the number?
Yeah.
415-989-1616. She needs to do that and make an appointment to meet with an employment law attorney who represents workers, not in the workers' compensation area, but an employee,
uh-huh.
and have at least an initial consultation. And that's what you need to tell her.
Okay.
Because it may well be that she has some basis here for looking into perhaps bringing some action against the school district for doing this. I don't know. I am not an employment law attorney, but I think that's what should be done. And if you like, you can call a lawyer number and talk with Bruce Bernstein this evening. If you'll call 1-800-525-9917 and pose the question to Bruce. Maybe he will have some more specific information that he can give you for your friend. Okay?
Okay, thanks very much.
All right, Tony. Take care. Bye-bye. And if you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. And if you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is, and they'll do their best to find someone for you. And I want to reiterate to you, with respect to workers' compensation, the CAW, that you can go to the website, caw.org, www.caw.org, or call 1-800-648-3132 if you want to get a workers' compensation attorney. Or you can go to the Board of Legal Specialization website, California Specialist. That's one long word, .org, californiaspecialist.org, and find out who the certified specialists in the 11 fields are in your area. Or you can call 415-538-2100. You know, please understand this, everybody. When I start to cut off a listener who's starting to go on and on, I do it because, frankly, my guests cannot give specific legal advice, and if there are a number of questions, it's really important for people to make an appointment with an attorney in that area by calling the lawyer referral service of whatever the county is and sit down and take the time to ask the questions. We cannot, you know, solve the problem on the air. The whole purpose of this program is to try to give you some direction of what might be available and kind of point to where you might go next. So please understand that. I'm not trying to be rude to anybody, but those are the parameters that we're under. I only have less than an hour on this program. Allison, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about what options are available, if any, between temporary disability payments and permanent and stationary. Would you be able to speak to that, or one of the lawyers?
Sure. This is Jason. I'll try to answer that. Temporary disability is a workers' comp benefit that is paid as a wage loss benefit. Typically shortly after an injury or when someone is off work recovering from a procedure, maybe due to surgery, or maybe they've been given some temporary work restrictions that the employer can't accommodate with modified work, and so they're off work getting that benefit. Under the current law, there is a 2-year limit on that benefit. In other words, you can get a maximum of 2 years of those payments, temporary disability. And then permanent stationary is a term of art we use in the system to refer to the point in time at which a person has reached, we call it a point of maximum medical improvement. In other words, they've gotten about as good as we think they're going to get. And at that point, you then potentially become entitled to a different benefit that we call permanent disability. don't know if that answers your question.
Does that help you, Allison?
Well, thanks for clarifying the terms. I'm sort of going to be in the middle of those two pretty soon, and so that's what I'm curious about is if at the end of those 2 years the temporary disability payments end and I'm still not permanent and stationary, are there any other type of public insurance programs that I would be qualified for, or do I just have to basically wait until permanent stationary occurs to receive a settlement?
This is Lester, if I can just take that for a second. There is a way to get other benefits, and that is if you have applied for state disability, assuming your employer withholds for state disability, it's SDI, if you apply in a timely basis, you can get EDD benefits or state disability benefits during that third year.
Mm-hmm.
The caveat, however, is that depending upon what your status is during that third year, it's possible that you would have your permanent disability payments, if they were payable during that third year, would be used as an offset in the future for some of your state disability benefits. But if you haven't applied already for state disability and you're still on temporary disability, it may not be too late to apply, but do not wait until the 2 years runs, because it is almost always too late at that point.
We're going to move on, Allison. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. All right, Andre, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi, Chuck. Thank you very much.
Do I have the correct pronunciation of your name?
Yes, Andre.
Andre, okay, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I sustained a workers' comp injury in 1986. I was in my mid-30s, and eventually I was awarded a judgment. It was terribly difficult. My attorney had abandoned my case because, I guess, of his own health. I took my case on pro per. Eventually I got state disability, and then I had to go on a permanent federal disability. So I have a comment here for your guests. I hope they can respond.
Go ahead, sure.
Sure. So I was really forced out of the job market due to a pre-existing medical condition, that being insulin-dependent diabetes. And I don't know if you're aware that according to the a lot of diabetic specialists, they forecast that by the year 2014, one in three people in the United States will be diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that this rising epidemic of diabetes is really going to affect this whole situation of workers' comp. I know that the reason I got a poor judgment for myself was that, you know, I had this pre-existing medical condition. So they really weren't willing to take on my case. I think that also prohibited me from getting any kind of further medical treatment.
Let me get some comments for you on this, Andre. Turn your radio back up. Thank you very much for calling.
Oh, thank you, Chuck.
Does anybody have any comments with respect to what Andre's saying about diabetes, et cetera, and the potential problems that there may be in the future?
I'll take it.
Lester, yeah, please.
If a underlying non-industrial medical condition that a person is suffering from is aggravated or accelerated by the industrial injury,
mm-hmm.
then that underlying condition would, yes, need to be treated under the workers' compensation system. But, of course, you need to have the nexus between the non-industrial condition and the industrial condition confirmed by a physician and mm-hmm. or the court in order mm-hmm. to make the connection. So that's certainly something that would have been or maybe is available to Andre.
All right. Our number here, we still have a few minutes on the air, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. It is also our Call a Lawyer night. I want to thank the people who have joined us here for Call a Lawyer: Jeff Hayden, criminal law; Janet Frankel, a family law. She'll be taking your calls tomorrow. If you call in tonight and leave your name and phone number, she will get your name and phone number, and she'll call you back tomorrow. Peter Fortune for legal malpractice law; Bruce Bernstein, employment law; Sam Wu, landlord-tenant law; Laura Drossman, business law, entertainment law, trademark law; Frank Adam, tax law, real estate; Ron Rohde, patent law, aviation law, lemon law, arbitration. And tomorrow, Leon Baer, certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be waiting for your call between 8 a.m. and noon. That's Thursday, September 26th at 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. And Leon will be on the program actually in a couple of weeks. We're going to do a program on loan sharks and student loans, et cetera, et cetera. So I hope you will join us then. Elaine, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi.
I have more than one question.
Let's start with one. Let's start with one, Elaine.
Okay. Well, I had two injuries at work, one in 95 and 96. And in 2001, the workers' comp judge deemed me permanent stationary, 100% physically permanently disabled.
Wow.
And I was, I was awarded, yes, actually, I was a resident training. I was doing my specialty.
Mm.
And anyway, so I was given it came up to $413 a week to live on. And I found that I couldn't live on $413 a week in the Bay Area. So I had to start working. So I've been working part-time. And in any case, in 2000, I had been seen by a county PM&R doctor, and she had been prescribing 21 hours of attendant care, 3 hours of house cleaning, you know, certain medications, and those are paid for. In 2006, my care was transferred to what's called an agreed-upon medical examiner, and he's the one who's made all those decisions since then. And about that same time, the insurance company, the claims company, also changed and has been unwilling to do anything. In 2007, I went to an AME, and
I'm sorry, you went to an
agreed upon medical examiner.
Okay, all right. Okay.
That my attorney gave me the name of.
Right.
And he cut my hours in half and pretty much gave me a bad deal.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, I've seen him a few more times, and I've asked my attorney, could I see another AME because I don't have confidence in this physician.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, no, he's the only one.
Mm-hmm.
I offered to travel out of the area, and he said it doesn't matter. He is the only one. So I was wondering, how does one become an AME? Do you need to be a QME first? I mean, I know you would have to be a PM&R, but
let me get some comments, Elaine, because I don't want to run out of time on the program, and I want to give my guests a chance to respond and give you some input from them. Lester, do you mind chiming in on this first?
An agreed medical examiner does not have to be a QME. An agreed medical examiner is generally only used when there are attorneys involved. In other words, both the applicant attorney representing the injured worker and the defense attorney representing the insurance company or the employer agree upon a doctor because of that doctor's reputation for being fair-minded. Generally, an AME doctor is also a QME, but it is absolutely not a requirement.
What does QME mean?
A QME is a qualified medical examiner, which means that they have passed an examination given by the state of California that reflects upon their competency to deal with workers' compensation issues.
So what suggestion do you have for her now in light of this has been going on now for nearly 20 years. What comments do you have for her? And obviously, there's a lot more of facts, I'm sure, that Elaine would like to tell you, but we don't have the time to do that. Do you have any other comments for her at this point?
Well, you know, the fact that an agreed medical examiner reduced the number of hours that a person is entitled to for home health care is reflective of what her condition was at that time. If the condition now is different, then my suggestion would be to get a reevaluation with that agreed medical examiner and demonstrate that the condition is now one that needs more care.
And is her attorney correct that she is not entitled to go to another AME?
Once an agreed medical examiner has been appointed, and if mm-hmm. that agreed medical examiner is still in practice and there's no other compelling legal reason to change the doctor, then that doctor does stay on the case.
Elaine, we're going to move on. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. And the last call, I think, will be, unfortunately, because we have some other calls that have come in. Tom, welcome to Your Legal Rights. We have about 1 minute, Tom, if you'd like to pose your question.
Hi, yes. I was on the same dosage of pain medicine for 4 years, and suddenly the doctor decided to reduce my dose of pain management medicine, and I've not been comfortable with that lower dosage.
So you have more pain now because of the lower dosage, is that right?
That's right. And I was wondering, isn't there a patient's pain bill of rights passed by the state legislature by Lonnie Hancock? And
well, let me get some comments for you. You did have a workers' compensation case?
Yes.
Okay. And your case is over, is it?
The medicals are left.
Oh, you still have the medicals? Okay.
Perpetuity.
Yeah, Tom, let me get some comments for you because, unfortunately, we're nearly out of time. What comments, Jason, do you have for Tom?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I don't know about the interaction between the patient's or the pain bill of rights that he referenced. My recommendation would simply be to go back to the doctor who is prescribing the medications and explain the pain you're in and that you're not as comfortable on the lower dosage and hopefully that doctor will be receptive to that, but it's really, frankly, an issue between the patient and the doctor, not one that I, as an attorney, would get directly involved in.
How about you, Lester? Any comments for Tom?
Medical treatment under the workers' compensation system is primarily dictated by what's called the medical treatment utilization schedule. And if that doctor is following that medical treatment utilization schedule, in either trying to wean the patient off of medications or the medication dosage was just too high and not within the limits, it's probably appropriate care. But I agree with what Jason had to say.
We're coming, I'm sorry, to the end of the program. I want to thank you very much, Lester Friedman, Alice O'Sullivan, and Jason Marcus, for joining us.
Thank you, Chuck.
Lovely to have you. All three are members of CAW, the California Applicants Attorneys Association. Lester and Alice are former chairs of the Board of Legal Specialization. They're certified specialists in the area of workers' comp. And Jason's about to take the exam to become a certified specialist of workers' compensation. So thank you, all three of you, for being on the program. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, if you're interested in hearing about recent employment law decisions that may be applicable to you as decided by the U.S. Supreme Court and the California Supreme Court, and also some current employment law issues, that's what we're going to be talking about next week. My guests will be employment law attorneys Andrew Friedman and Mark Delgado. I will have a certified specialist in appellate law, Ellen Lake, and mediator Steve Pearl. So I hope you will join us then. Thank you very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Uh-huh.